Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. U.S. Defense Secretary Ash Carter made a major announcement this week. Women can now serve in combat positions across the entire United States military.
This means that as long as they qualify and meet the standards, women will now be able to contribute to our mission in ways they could not before. They'll be allowed to drive tanks, fire mortars, and lead infantry soldiers into combat. They'll be able to serve as Army Rangers and Green Berets, Navy SEALs, Marine Corps infantry, Air Force parajumpers, and everything else that was previously open only to men.
Now, the decision opens up the remaining 10% of military positions that still barred women. Secretary Carter said the armed services have until the 1st of January to submit their plans to make this historic change. So joining us now with some reaction is Congresswoman Nikki Tsongas. She's a member of the House Armed Services Committee and represents Massachusetts 3rd District. Representative Tsongas, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Meghna. Good to be with you.
It's great to have you. So your father was, of course, a member of the U.S. military and Air Force colonel. So you've got a long history with veterans and the military. What does this mean to you?
Well, I think this decision has been a long time coming and, in my mind, a long time overdue. And that has been made ever more apparent to me as I've been in Congress these past 8 years serving on the Armed Services Committee, making multiple trips to Afghanistan and Iraq, and seeing over and over again the many ways in which women are already serving in combat but don't see the benefits of that. It doesn't accrue to them in their professional career. So I think it's a long time coming, long overdue, and it's great to see the Obama administration move forward on this.
Right, and so as you pointed out, we've already seen women in combat situations in Iraq and Afghanistan in particular. I noticed that the New York Times estimates that the decision will open up about 220,000 military jobs to women that they hadn't had the opportunity to pursue before. Now, of course, the military has undergone some pretty seismic shifts in the past, fully integrating the military in 1948, lifting the ban on LGBT members of the military from serving openly in 2011. Do you see this decision as sort of the final barrier?
It's certainly an important barrier. You know, about now currently about 14% of the armed services across the board is female, and I've seen numbers estimating that it could be up to 25% by 2025. And I think I've heard, for example, the now retired chief of staff of the Army General Ray Odierno say you can't have the best army in the world if you automatically exclude women from a good number of positions and all the talent that they represent. So I think it was, you know, I think this decision, they were pushed to this decision by just recognizing that they were missing out on an important talent pool that was already serving in their midst and doing so admirably. And as they did a lot of extensive studies, they realized that if women could meet the gender-neutral standards, there was no reason to exclude them from these positions. It's about 52 military occupational specialties
right
that qualify as combat-related positions.
And Representative Tsongas, I wonder how this decision by Secretary Carter affects other issues that you have been so vocal on and so influential on, and that, of course, I'm thinking of, the fight against sexual assault in the military.
Well, I think one of the issues we've really had to wrestle with is, despite the fact that there have been growing numbers of women in the military, that in many ways they had a sort of a second-class status. And this was made apparent to me in the very egregious issue of sexual assault in the military and the inability and many failures of the different services to really address that issue. They have been changing, challenged by legislative action in Congress. They have been changing, but it really took a concerted effort on the part of many members of Congress to push them to that. I saw it in other ways. For example, body armor had never been developed for women, gender-specific body armor. When I was in Afghanistan making a visit, a couple of women came up to me to thank me for my efforts around getting the services to focus on developing gender-specific body armor, but they said, we're issued men's shoes? So there are often very subtle ways in which it's very clear here that the services really haven't carefully considered the changing composition of their force. And I think one of the very good things about opening up all positions is it sends a strong message that, you know, women can compete for these positions, and when they meet those standards, there's a recognition that they were served well, and that we can't do without that talent pool.
Right. Representative Nikki Tsongas, a member of the House Armed Services Committee and the person who represents Massachusetts' 3rd District, always great to have you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Meghna. Take care.
Well, let's turn now to Jason Kane. He's an Army veteran who served in 5 combat deployments and spent 6 years with U.S. Special Operations. He's also the former director of Intergovernmental Affairs for the Department of Veteran Affairs and is currently an MPA candidate at the Harvard Kennedy School. And his research is on the history of the U.S.'s combat exclusion policy for women. Jason Kane, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
It's great to have you. So you have served, you spent, in 5 combat deployments, 6 years with Special Ops. I mean, what was your experience, briefly, if you could describe it, with women who served alongside you?
Well, the most impactful and first experience was really in 2003 on our operational base. I was at the 82nd Airborne. Staff Sergeant Kim Bowles was the only female on the base. We all knew her. And her job was literally to place her body between us and our biggest fear, IEDs. She was the IED tech. She disabled the bombs, but it was still not considered completely an equal. On December 14th, she died doing her job, protecting us. And that's kind of where my mind changed, that women are already doing everything and should be able to do any job they can compete for.
Wow, what a story. So what is your response then to, let's say, veterans that you might know or colleagues who disagree with this decision that Secretary Carter is making?
There really isn't a whole lot of disagreement.
There isn't.
There are certain pockets. Within the Marines, we're certainly a strong advocate against this policy change, but most of the other services that have pretty much gotten in line since the 2013 decision. This is only an affirmation of that decision by Secretary Panetta nearly 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, so tell me a little bit more from your studies about why have the Marines in particular been holding out?
I think they're a smaller force, a more cohesive, kind of indoctrinated force, and it takes a little bit longer for for changes to occur in that very tight-knit, hoorah kind of atmosphere. And it's inevitable. I mean, they don't take any change well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's the main thing that made them just a little bit different. But they'll follow orders and get in line, and I don't think that's an issue anymore.
Yeah. So Jason, I wonder. I mean, you're doing research on the history of the military's combat exclusion policy. It seems to have been going on for many decades now. Do you have any sense as to some of the one or two of the major milestones here beyond, of course, Secretary Carter's announcement this week?
Right. No, absolutely. Well, I mean, it's kind of been a still term from evolutionary biology, a punctuated equilibrium. So in 1948, a lot of jobs were opened up to women following World War II, and they recognized the importance of women. And then in 1974, when they eliminated the draft, we realized that we didn't have enough men to fill the all-volunteer force. And then again in 1994 was when the kind of current iteration of the combat exclusion and policy was put into place that restricted women from ground combat, direct ground combat, which was very hard to define, and there was no way to really do that.
Yeah.
And so it was a slow realization that there's no way to keep them out.
Well, Jason, your cell phone line's a little shaky here, but I want to see if I can get one last little question in here. How much of this decision this week by Secretary Carter is actually an acknowledgement not only of the fact that there are qualified women in the military to serve in these positions, but that the nature of U.S. military engagements themselves is changing? I mean, I'm thinking back to the first story you told us, that already today there are women on the front lines who are facing dangers equivalent to that of their male colleagues.
Absolutely. We have tried for years to try to segment women outside of certain jobs. That has basically failed. And now, especially with the integration of female engagement teams in Afghanistan, men were not able to search females on the ground. So we were missing all of that intel from that important segment of the population. So that is you know, a huge and obvious delineation. And in general, the female mindset has so much to bring to warfighting and to our U.S. military.
Well, Jason Kane is an Army veteran who served 5 combat deployments, including 6 years with U.S. Special Operations. He's currently a graduate student at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. Jason Kane, what a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you much.
There's more of the show in just a minute. When we come back, we'll talk about the private sector's role in curbing climate change. I'm Meghna Chakravarti. This is Radio Boston.